Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of The Rick Emerson Show is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
The following is a production of the Emerson News Network.
We were somewhere around Barstow, on the edge of the desert, when the drugs began to take hold. I remember saying something like,
"I feel a bit lightheaded. Yeah, you should drive."
Suddenly, there was a terrible roar all around us, and the sky was full of what looked like huge bats, all swooping and screeching and diving around the car. And a voice was screaming, "Holy Jesus, where are these goddamn animals?" No point mentioning these bats, I thought. The poor bastard will see them soon enough. We had 2 bags of grass, 75 pellets of mescaline, 5 sheets of high-powered blotter acid, a salt shaker half full of cocaine, multicolored uppers, downers, screamers, laughers, also a quart of tequila, quarter rum, case of beer, pint of raw ether, and 2 dozen amyls. Not that we needed all that for the trip, but once you get locked into a serious drug collection, the tendency is to push it as far as you can.
It's after the hour of one, and this the month of May in the year of our Lord 2011. Thank you for drawing near that ye might be amused and entertained on this, what the hell, goddamn day it is. Thursday.
Is it Thursday?
I don't know. Maybe. Maybe not. I don't know. I just don't know anymore. I could really go for a pint of raw ether right about now.
All that flying back in time in your TARDIS has thrown you on.
Your mom's a TARDIS. Has anybody ever made a retardist joke?
Oh, I'm sure
somebody has to have done that by now. Somebody needs to formalize that, to establish once and for all an on the record retardist joke, just so I know that I don't have to worry about it. Because then if I think that it's a comedy stone that has not yet been overturned, then it's like I feel obligated to do it. But if I know that somebody else is taking care of it, then I don't have to worry about it. It was like that whole thing about creating it, like that whole thing I had about creating it, like a Norwegian eating tool called a fjork. It's like if somebody else has already done it, then I don't have to worry about making sure that everybody hears that. You know, that I can just move on.
That should be something you can buy at IKEA.
That's what I'm saying. But, you know, in any event. Ether. All right. Hello, it is 503-505-6964 if you'd like to be part of today's program, and I know you would. My friends, my companions, my amigos, my well-scrubbed chums. It's 503-505-6964, and yes, holy God Almighty, spread thinly on toast, it's only Thursday. It's Rick at RickEmerson.com. If you'd like to join us today, that's Rick at RickEmerson.com. If you'd like to email with your comments, questions, clarifications, observations, ruminations, ponderings, musings of an ironic nature, whatever it is you have today, Dawn Taylor can also be reached. That's Dawn, D-A-W-N, at RickEmerson.com, or showpony at RickEmerson.com, and I'm not kidding.
Have you actually...
I'm not kidding. That's now taken care of. So you just send an email to showpony@rickeverson.com, and I swear to God it'll go right to Dawn. Which is really what makes the whole job worthwhile. I don't really care about anything else. It's things like that that really, that's what gets me out of bed in the morning. I mean, at least for today, we'll pretend it was morning. Let's see. Text box open on the website. Also, Skype. You can Skype if you'd like. It's Rick Emerson Show. That is all one word at Skype. That is Rick Emerson Show. Coming up today, we got Clergy Watch, Hick Watch, Corpse Watch. Now, we just had a Corpse Watch, but you're saying we have yet another one.
I have yet another Corpse Watch. A brand new, fresh-scented Corpse Watch.
That's probably not true.
No.
I mean, the fresh-scented part.
Trust me, it's really not.
Okay. So we got a corpse watch of some kind, of some form, some fashion, some manner, some function coming up today. Also, clergy watch, also hick watch. And then we will do, if I have a chance to get at this later on, we'll do the second half of our Sid and Marty Krofft song. I was trying to do like a Rama thing. Extravaganza, strong. I was going to say strong song, songanza. But see, that doesn't really work. Songanza sounds like some sort of like an Italian dish.
Oh, how about songtacular?
Maybe. Yeah.
I played the entire opening theme from H.R. Puffin Stuff to open Hamfisted Radio yesterday.
Was that inspired by our discussion of that here?
Yes. I hadn't heard it in a really long time. And I forgot, A, it wasn't nearly as great of a song as I thought it was. And B, it's one of those songs that basically tells you the entire history of how he ended up in, like, Puffin Stuff land.
All of the Sid and Marty Krofft songs
do that. 5 minutes long.
No, Sid and Marty Krofft songs are all, they're all just exposition as performed by, like, by, like, the 1910 Fruit Gum Company. That's all it is. The songs are all, like, the other day we were playing, we played The Lost Saucer and Dr. Shrinker. I mean, three kids shrunken by a laser ray.
Yeah.
Will they always be so small? Will they be lucky and get away? Dr. Shrinker is a madman with an evil mind. And before that, it gets the whole thing about how they're on the plane and they crash on the island. It's all laid out right there.
Well, the H.R. Puffin Stuff thing is like, and he was a boy and he got out on a boat and he had his magic flute and then there was a horrible storm and the thing took him to the island. But then there was an evil witch and she was, and it's like it just goes on and on and on.
Yeah, no, the method of Sid and Marty Krofft is to make sure that no matter where you were coming in, like in the story, that you had all the information you needed to become a happy and satisfied viewer, like from episode one.
And how sort of crazy and drug-addled those stories were, I think that was probably a good idea.
See, and everybody says that they were drug-addled, but here's the thing. I think that may be a little bit of retrospective hallucinogenic sheen we're putting on those things. Or it's possible that the art directors of those programs were taking a little bit of the Mary Jane or the what have you. Sid and Marty Krofft, and I believe them for their part, and I'm not, like, doesn't matter to me one way or the other, they have actually always denied any sort of drug connection.
And I believe them.
True,
I do.
Because they were like 80 years old even then.
But it was definitely trying to go for that sort of, that whole Peter Maxey late 60s, early 70s kind of art direction style that was all very psychedelic and weird and dreamlike.
Well, all the Sid and Marty Krofft stuff was sort of, it was post-Beatles. It was all very, it all came after Strawberry Fields and after, not even like Help, but I mean, after that whole, like the Yellow Submarine era. And so everything was kind of muddled on that, but in this way that was scaled down a little bit because, again, they were trying to, they were pitching these things as children's shows. I actually have, let's see, do I have the Lost Saucer theme? Yeah, I do. I'll get to it here in just a bit. So today we're going to do, I was going to do a handful of those sort of anyway, just to complete it in my own head. Because Land of the Lost is the same way. Marsha, Will, and Holly on a routine expedition, greatest earthquake ever known, da 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 ba ba ba. And then they show a dinosaur, and that, like, that is it. You are totally set. All right. Let me just set this up. By the way, somebody like to clarify that you can't retard us, you can only tard us to an alternate timeline. FYI, in case you're wondering. So we got Clergy Watch, Hick Watch, Corpse Watch coming up. Also, a handful of other Sid and Marty Krofft songs. Also, Don Taylor tracking the following headlines for you on this Thursday.
Well, the new trend in Oklahoma is for teenagers setting themselves on fire.
Awesome.
The White House has announced that they're no longer going to reenact stuff for photographers. And a fellow in Virginia discovered you can't just make your own license plate and declare yourself a free citizen on a free highway.
Okay. So you can't do that.
No, you're not allowed to do that, no matter how much you think that you should be able
to. Okay, because that's the thing I was planning on doing, but you're now saying no.
Well, in the state of Virginia, apparently, you can't get away with that.
Okay, all right.
You can't just put a handwritten license plate on the back of your car and
you can't
say,
be for the United States of Ted.
No, not really.
All right. This is all true. Again, if you would like to get on board, it's 503-505. 6964. You can also email it to rick@rickemerson.com. Somebody's asking if show pony is one or two words. It's one word, sir. So if it bounced, that might be why. It's actually just, yes, it's just as it sounds. I'm going to send something to showpony@rickemerson.com right now.
I think now that I've got my brand new laptop and I've restored Steam and Left 4 Dead to my laptop, and I'm, my Steam name is Thunderclap. And I've decided I'm going to have to go in and change it and be show pony.
Hello, show pony. Such an idiot. Show pony at rickemerson.com.
Now, does that forward to me now?
Let's
am I going to get
out.
This?
Hold on. Show pony at rickemerson.com. All right, at
okay,
just
let's
sent.
See.
All right, you let me know if that arrives. Check
yeah.
your Dawn at rickemerson.com.
There it is. Hello, show pony. So, yeah, so if you email showpony at rickemerson.com, that will come to me.
Yes. Makes me happy. That really, seriously, no matter what else is going wrong in my life at any given moment, that's the sort of thing that'll put a smile on my face. That's wonderful. Mm. You should tell people that showpony is your Indian name. One of those things where, like, on your mother's side, you're like 190th. Blackfoot or something.
I hope people don't think it's some kind of a weird sexual thing.
How would it be a weird sexual? I don't even know where it came from.
So you got your furries, then you got your pony play people and all that. Yeah, I mean, I hope people don't think it's something like that.
I don't even remember why we started saying show pony.
I believe it came in, I was talking about comparing myself to women who are like tall and statuesque, very storm largish, very put together and well dressed and well groomed, and I might as well be comparing myself to like a show pony or something, because it's not like we're even the same species.
Is a show pony a thing that exists? Do they have those?
I believe so. I believe that's yes. When you have your pony in a pony show, it would be a show pony.
That was a bit of a circular definition, Don. Okay.
I believe there are pony shows.
It's like when the Lipizzaner Stallions come to town, except they're
right.
coming to Tiny Town.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Exactly.
Okay. So it's somewhere between regular horse and mini horse lies the land of show pony.
So is a male pony still a stallion? Because you think stallion, you think rawr, and you think really huge and big and butch. But like ponies, a boy pony, is a boy pony still a stallion?
I'm back on the fact that you think stallions sound like panthers somehow.
I don't really do.
You think
do
stallion,
horses.
You think rawr.
Well, the only noise is, you know, the horses whinny and go, you know, and I can't really do those noises.
Someone says, I frequently use the line, you are such a TARDIS. Then I laugh. Then I feel bad about myself. Then I do it again.
Geek humor.
So we'd like to thank everybody who listened last hour to Legion of News, which, by the way, wasn't live. So if you were listening to Legion of News last hour on this day, which is May 19th, 2011, and you said to yourself, my God, what a fine slice of live entertainment this is. I can't believe that this quality broadcast is coming to me just mere moments after the words are uttered. You, sir or ma'am, were swindled.
I keep saying these really clever things into the text box. Why don't they respond?
They're not repeating any of my witticisms. It's because we actually taped today's Legion of News last night because there was some. They were having a parent-teacher conference or something over at Cascadia. I don't know what's going on.
They're at some kind of a media conference today.
Really? Nobody invited us to the media conference.
I know.
Bastards.
Believe me, I know.
Sons of bitches. All right, and yes, it is Thursday. You're right. Okay, so that is, people are reminding me now that it's Thursday. This is where I would normally talk about what I did last night, but I honestly don't remember. I don't remember at all. I have no recollection. My wife has been out of town for a couple of days, so it's like my schedule is thrown off, and all the mechanisms, all of the signposts by which I would keep track of what goddamn day it is, they have all been stripped away from me because, we were taping Legion of News last night, because we did Legion of News yesterday during the day, and then we came back and we did it at like 7 o'clock at night. Yes.
Yeah.
And then, I think, and then we got done at like 8 o'clock, and then again, Lara's out of town, so it's like I don't have any, you know, I have her schedule pretty well, you know, committed to. That's part of it, just my daily routine, just my sort of my biorhythms are all set to a lot of things, including when she's at work and when she's home. But now she's just sort of gone. But then she's getting back tonight, and then she's leaving again tomorrow night to go to some damn place. And so, anyway, it's just a whole thing. So now that I'm no longer in the actual creating the book process, but I'm in this weird hole. Now we're just doing interviews and doing stuff here. But that is no schedule to it either. And so I have no notion of what day or time it is, like, ever at all right now.
What did you eat for dinner?
I have no idea. No. I honestly couldn't tell you. I'm
strangely entertained by the way you eat when your wife is out of town. I don't know why I find that so fascinating.
I think I may have just had, like, a whole wheel of laughing cow cheese wedges. And not even a flavor that I really like, but I think it was all that was in the fridge. All the way in the fridge. Here's the thing.
I didn't even realize there were multiple flavors. I thought there was.
Of Laughing Cow cheese?
Yeah, I thought there was just the one kind.
No.
I know there's a soft one, and then there's the. The little round ones.
No, I'm not talking about the little. I'm not talking about the little round ones, which are called. There's a name for those.
Yeah, but there's the wedges of the kind of soft stuff. And
those are wonderful.
Really,
that's what I'm talking
delicious.
About. No, yeah. I don't know. There's like five. You're a savage. There's like five different flavors of those. Mm. Those this was my least favorite flavor. It was the blue cheese flavor, which is the thing that I really only like on, you know, like salad or something. I mean, I don't really want to. I don't want to eat a whole wedge of blue cheese, and yet. You know, what am I going to do? You know, actually go purchase some food? I don't think so. So I'm at home and I'm sort of rooting around for, spare crackers. All I found, by the way, were rice cakes. Those are a thing that don't really... I don't even know why we own those. She doesn't eat them. I don't eat them. It's just they've just been in the cupboard for X number of months. And I'm like, well, you know, I got to put... And the cheese... Like, I can't just sit and just eat a wedge of... And if anybody has seen the Laughing Cow cheese, you know what I'm talking about. It's very soft. It's very soft, very spreadable. But it is in these individual small wedges that are then put together into a whole wheel inside a package. But here's the thing you can do. You can just slice off. You can just cut yourself off like a big wedge of cheese or whatever, you know, from like a regular, like if you have a brick of cheese or something like a regular size, like a regulation size wheel of cheese. You can cut yourself a big chunk of that. You can't just be eating a thing of spreadable cheese by itself. It's the spreadable aspect somehow makes you hideous.
Yeah.
Because then it's like, especially because it comes in this sort of foil wrapping, and then it's like, and then inevitably, I mean, whether you say to yourself that you're going to do this or not, you will then find yourself licking the wrapping. And then it's like, then you just have to kill yourself. Then you just have to take your own life so that you don't continue to trend downward on this, just this path of ugliness. So I think that I may have been rooting around in the cupboard looking for just anything of a crisp nature onto which I could put the cheese. And then I found these rice cakes. But again, I don't know why they're there because she doesn't eat them either. She's actually made the observation that she doesn't. That's not a thing that I will ever catch her eating, and yet they're in the cupboard. So I don't know if a friend of hers brought them or if they're there because she was going to use them in some larger creation. I mean, I can't really imagine what you'd be using rice cakes for. But there I am last night, inadvertently eating healthily because there's just nothing else around. Taking the Laughing Cow cheese just sort of onto the rice cake. And then, and then, of course, it's impossible to do any of this without everything just sounding like some sort of a canine dinner bell, you know, and then, I think that was what my dinner consisted of last night. I think I went home, took a nap, came back, did Legion of News again, went home, put the Laughing Cow cheese on the rice cake, which is like putting the lime in the coconut, but different and not as interesting. And then I think I sat in my office and,
While dogs were sitting and staring at you?
Yes.
Yes.
And then that's it. And then the next thing I remember is waking up this morning. So there you go. That was my. How was your evening, Don?
Well, here's the thing. Let me see if I can get real with you right now. If I can open myself up to the people here.
Rap with the folks.
I don't think this really counts as irony. It's more just sort of embarrassing. You being a man who has. Who just wrote a book about how to maintain your finances.
Yes.
I, on the other hand, am someone who is just sort of easing into somewhat financial stability when my husband got sick. And so I'm drowning in debt. I have piles of medical bills. I'm not making enough money. I am literally just like drowning in debt. So guess who's going back into the chocolate business?
Would that be you?
That would be me.
Excellent.
Because I'm going to end up living in a cardboard box under a freeway overpass if I don't actually make some money, and I'm not exaggerating. So if you're listening to this and you like fine chocolates, I'm going to spend the entire evening tonight is going to be devoted to getting polyurychocolates.com back online. If you go there right now, if you're listening live and you go there right now, you will see like there are broken links to photos and things are not really quite functional.
Does it say something like, sorry, it's been a long time since I've updated the blog? And then it's like October of 2009.
Yeah, there's a little guy with a little construction hat with a little like flashlight doing stuff. No, it's really just it just looks really sad because not all the links are current and things like that. So, but if you are listening to this later, like tomorrow or the next day, if you're listening in the future on podcast, it might be actually live right now. But rather than, again, like I said before, somebody offered me $100 towards my laptop, and I'm just not comfortable just taking cash from people when I'm not giving them anything in return. It's just not something I'm good at. It just seems kind of cheesy. But
if you're giving them fine chocolates in return,
I want to earn my way, baby. So what I'm doing is I am now going to pimp the living hell out of this. And if you are a listener and you would like to hear me continue onward and not stick my head in an oven or live under a freeway overpass, please. We are going.
So
to
really, the audience is responsible for maintaining not just a standard of living, but in fact, your actual life at this point.
Yes, pretty much. Yes.
So that if you die, it's on their hands.
That's exactly it.
Wonderful. Now, I can testify, by the way, that was it last? See, this is again where the years are now drifting together. I don't believe it was last Christmas. It may have been two Christmases ago. When did I place an order for Polidori chocolates from you? It may have been Christmas of
yeah, I think it was two
of 09.
Christmases ago.
So I think
yeah.
Christmas of 2009, I actually bought several of your, like the Lovecraft. Is that what they are? Was it the Lovecraft collection? What was
yeah.
it? It was like the demon
yeah, it was
themed.
The Chocanomicon.
Yes, and I got to say, hey, really, and I, anybody who has tried Don's chocolates or other consumables knows that this is, I'm not just saying this is true, that they are fantastic. They're like the best things you'll ever put in your mouth. Seriously, they're wonderful. So, I had a whole sort of variety of those that I got for Christmas and that I recommended to everybody. So I heartily endorse them. So that is a thing Rick Emerson's not just saying. They really are probably the finest. And I'm not like a huge chocolate guy either. But they are probably the finest sort of like prepared candies that I've ever had in my life.
Well, thank you.
So yeah, they're quite some. Please dispel Polidori for people.
It's Polidori chocolates, all one word, .com.
So there you go. We'll put a link up to that on the website. So that is going to be starting soon.
Starting soon. I'm going to be, once I leave here, I am going home, and then I'm going to spend the entire evening wrestling with that. And hopefully it will be up before I go to bed tonight and,
awesome.
And ready to roll.
Excellent. By the way, but incidentally, that small thing of cheese, that's a baby bell of cheese.
Yes.
When it's just a small contiguous wheel.
The little one that's in the red wrapper.
That's adorable.
And those are chewier. Those are firmer than the
well, it's like real cheese. The other thing is like a condiment. You know, the spreadable cheese is like, I mean, it because it's like the consistency of butter, it would be just like sitting there just eating half a cube of butter, which you can't do.
Yeah, I had to give up on I had to walk away from the pub cheese. I was having some addiction problems with the Trader Joe's
yes.
pub cheese because the problem is it's like when I first started eating the pub cheese, a thing of pub cheese would last me for a really long time. And there's this thing that happens with me, particularly with certain foods, I will just like stop really think I will just stop regulating myself. So the next thing I know, I've eaten like a half a box of Triscuits
yeah.
and a half a thing of pub cheese all by myself. And I'm just like, oh, my God, I'm so filled
yeah.
with self-loathing right now.
Speaking of self-loathing and pub cheese, we had this moment at our house about 2 weeks ago. And I forget why. There was something was... There was something going on. It was either somebody was coming over, or there was some sort of occasion, some sort of event where we weren't going to be going out for dinner, but we wanted to have like some sort of snack foods around for some purpose. I think one of Lara's friends or relatives or somebody had been coming through town. Anyway, but I hit Trader Joe's, and she specifically requested that I get some pub cheese, and she didn't clarify which kind she wanted, so I got both. I got like the pub cheese with jalapeno, and then the pub cheese with horseradish. And then, of course, whoever it was that was supposed to come over that night ended up not coming over. And they canceled at the last minute. And so there I am just sitting. And then that's the worst of all possible, you know, because you can't really return pub cheese to the store. You know, because I think we'd actually opened it and sort of gotten stuff ready. And then the person's like, I'm sorry, you know, I got a whole thing with flat tire and dead relative washing my hair. You know, mother has cancer, won't be over. And I'm like, ah, okay. And so... So we just had all this food, and so then we just had like pounds of pub cheese sitting around the house, and again crackers and whatever. And I got to tell you, that's the thing. It's easy to put away just like a third of one of those tubs of pub cheese.
Yeah,
I mean, without even
it
really,
really is.
because it's you can just sort of take one of those Triscuits and just like scoop out. Like a huge towering, like this,
like a tablespoon of it on one
yeah.
cracker.
I mean, yeah. which is really like you might as well just be pumping oil into your heart directly. You might as well be getting a hypodermic and just shooting lard into your ventricular system.
And it's so delicious, and it's whipped, and so it's very
yeah.
light and it's very soft. And the thing is, if you're doing something else like watching a movie or reading a book or playing or killing zombies or something, you're not really keeping track necessarily.
No. Well, no, because there's no, yeah, it's not like a portion control item. No. You know, where it's like once you open a second package of cookies, you know you're on a calorie 101 and beyond. Yeah. No, this is just...
That's why I always try to, like, actually, like, not eat crackers right out of the box, particularly with the pub cheese.
Eat the whole box.
I get a plate and I get, like, a big handful of the crackers. I put them on a plate and then I put the box away in the kitchen. And that way, when those crackers are done, even if I go back and get more crackers, at least I know what I'm doing. I'm aware of how much I'm consuming.
And the thing is, and I couldn't decide which I liked better, the jalapeno pub cheese or the horseradish, and so I was just going back and forth. And so what I'm then doing is I'm putting huge amounts of cheese and fat and spice into my body all at once. And so the upshot of which is, like, I don't know if it was like, because it's not like... It's not like it's cracker and cheese combination number one that does it to you, or five, or 30. It's at some ill-defined point along the way where then you just cut to the end of the evening where I'm sitting in the chair in my office just going, ugh! You know, and it just, and you just feel like something horrible is happening to your insides.
Yeah. Well, I sent you that photo on Christmas Day.
Yes.
Where it's like I was sitting by my roaring fire in my house and I had a glass of wine and I had a plate where I had like a big pile of like two different kinds of crackers and then my open container of pub cheese and a bunch of salami. And it was delicious. And it was awesome. And then, like, yeah, later on Christmas night, I was just kind of like, that was a bad idea.
I never sent this back to you, but when you sent me on Christmas that photograph of your house where you had all the snack foods laid out, I never sent this back at the time because it seemed like it would have indicated something. It would have been another, like, weird, creepy Rick and Dawn thing. But at that moment, I swear to you, when I received that, Laura and I were in the kitchen actually assembling a plate of snack foods that looked exactly like the one that you sent me. I've actually still got the photo on my phone. I keep meaning to send it to you, and I never have.
So I'm getting multiple emails from people at Show Pony.
That's wonderful.
Hey, by the way, somebody wants to point out to Dawn, you know Jerry Lewis will be available to host a telethon for you after this weekend.
Someone, listener Roger writes, I am only familiar with the phrase dog and pony show. If you're the show pony in the dog and pony show, then that leaves just one spot for Rick.
All right. All right, it is 2:03 here at House of Whimsy. It's 503-505-6964. You can also email us, rick@rickemerson.com or Dawn, or, you know, whatever, at rickemerson.com. All right, before we do anything else, let's do then this.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
Oklahoma teens are taking part in a disturbing trend. They are setting themselves and their friends on fire. Dozens of YouTube videos document the fad. Teens are spraying their skin with highly flammable body spray, then lighting it on fire. Some use the spray to make fireballs that they throw at each other. Because teenagers are stupid.
How are they making fireballs to throw?
That I'm not sure of.
That's a thing I want to know more about.
An eighth grader tried the trick with disastrous results. She received third-degree burns, has been out of school for several weeks. Teachers and school counselors are aware that kids are trying this at home.
Well, it's only disastrous for her.
A group of teens in Del City, Oklahoma, say they've tried it before. Kid on the street, Nat Palmer, did it out of curiosity and said, "What can you say? We're kids."
Well, at least he has a good sense of his self-awareness seems to be highly trained. So what is it? So please do explain how they're doing this.
They're taking like stuff like Axe body spray,
right,
crap, really cheap stuff that's full of like lots of alcohol,
right,
spraying it on their skin, lighting it on fire. And of course, the alcohol just burns off. Right. And usually if you just do something like that, it's not going to burn you. It might singe the hair in your arms or something.
Because this is what we used to do with Aquanet when I was a kid. And to be fair, I really didn't do this because I've always been a little terrified of fire, which I think is probably the natural reaction to that. But I always knew that. I have a keen sense of my own incompetence in most ways, and then I knew that I was just what my grandfather would have called a stumble bum. I was the one guy who would, like, you know, try some sort of, you know, look, I got a cigarette lighter, I got some Aquanet, it's a blowtorch. I was the guy who would do that, and then I would sneeze or trip or fall, and then the whole house would be gone. So I would just watch my friends do that, always prepared to run away at the drop of a hat should things sort of, you know, become unwieldy. But that was the thing. My friend Brian would spray himself down with Aquanet, or he would spray it on it. This, in retrospect, seems really, really like a bad idea, so don't do this. But he would actually spray his pants down with Aquanet, and then light his pants on fire, which, now that I say it out loud, just seems even dumber than it did then. But again, most of the time, it actually would just do this cool, like, Nikki Sixx sort of a thing. And then it would actually go out because the alcohol would be gone and it wouldn't have been burning long enough to set the fabric on fire for some reason. And he would do it with his hand or his whatever. The other thing he would do is he would dip his hand in rubber cement, let it dry, and then light that. And I think he may have actually gone to jail at some point later on, now that I think about it. But it was just terrifying to me, because you do that wrong and then, you know.
Yeah, my thing that I thought was really clever, I don't even know where I came up with this idea. I know I didn't get it from anyone else. It just was from the stupidity of my own, like, 18 or 19-year-old mind. But I remember thinking it was very cool to take a little paper book of matches, flip it open, lick the back, stick it to my forehead, and then reach up and just light the whole thing so it would go whoof into flames. And the thing that works really well if your hair is, you know, pulled back.
Was this for people for an audience, or just like for your own amusement while looking in
no,
the mirror?
No, I would do that just to hey, look at me.
My head's on fire.
My head's on fire because, uh-huh, you know, I was a moron.
Okay.
And then, but I only really singed my hair a couple of times. But that's one of the things you look at and go, wow. Why did I think that was a good? Why did I think that was clever?
Did you have a short, like,
or funny
butch haircut or something? Because it seems like if your hair is of any length at all, that's gonna you're gonna be torchy.
The thing is, you've got the paper, the cardboard behind it, so
oh, I see.
It does go straight out from the side. So as long as your hair is pulled back, it won't do. But no, it was just a moronic thing to do for no purpose whatsoever. Then one day I thought, I wonder what would happen if I stuck this matchbook to
you
my would forehead.
Lick the book of matches and stick it to your head that way.
Right.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Well, that in a way is almost that you've got some sort of like super adhesive saliva that allows you to suspend a book of matches like to the front of your face.
I still used to lick money and stick it on my forehead if like the waitress wouldn't come by and bring me the check fast enough.
Okay.
Yeah. I licked way too many things I shouldn't have when I was young.
Makes me feel a little ill. All right, here is Don Taylor.
Let's do our Hick Watch.
Here's your Hick Watch for Thursday, right here on the Rick Emerson Radio program.
Copenhagen makes me feel so good. Copenhagen, the way I know it should. Well, I put a little chew in my mouth, go spitting, slobbering all around the house. That Copenhagen makes me feel so good. Oh, yeah.
Here's Don Taylor with your Hick Watch.
Well, two men in Broward County, Florida.
Of course.
Were caught dead to rights in a Key West high school when they went in to steal chicken nuggets. They tried to steal 30 pounds of high school cafeteria frozen chicken nuggets. They had them stacked up outside waiting to be hauled to their waiting car. The cops inside found that Lawrence Dixon of Davie, Florida, and Carl Dudley Crabtree of Hollywood, Florida, had also looted money from vending machines. They had a computer and some power equipment.
Wow.
The cops were there because a school employee said she saw the men poking around in her office. They had also apparently pried open the cafeteria freezer.
Is that Crabtree boy poking around inside your things, Gladys?
They had pried open the cafeteria freezer and took a 30-pound bag of chicken nuggets. Along with the chicken, cops found coins and, for some reason, a red and white graduation tassel. Crabtree and Dixon told police they needed the items to start a new business.
I know I shouldn't have to ask this, but what was the business they were going to start? Did they clarify?
I'm really not sure, but apparently it had nothing to do with the chicken nuggets because they couldn't explain why they were stealing the chicken nuggets.
Okay, well, see, then I'm glad I asked, because that was going to be... I was assuming they were going to open some sort of nuggetry somewhere.
Nuggetorium?
Nuggetorium, yes. And that they thought, well, look, the inventory is really where most of your overhead comes in, so we might as well just, you know, if we can eliminate that cost, it's all profit.
Yeah, Crabtree was ordered held on $55,000 bond, and Dixon is still sitting in jail because he was unable to make the $35,000 bail.
What's the first guy's name? Carl Dudley Crabtree?
There was who was it? There was Lawrence Dixon and Carl Dudley Crabtree.
But he was able to put up the note on his lean-to,
right?
And cover right. The.
Right,
that's wonderful.
He took out a second mortgage on his double wide.
Is there a mugshot of Carl Dudley Crabtree?
No, I wish there was. I don't think there is.
Hold on, I'm going to Google that name real quickly. Carl with a C?
Yes.
Carl Dudley Crabtree. All right, Crabtree. That's just Crabtree the normal way.
Yes.
All right, hold on a second. Here we go. Carl Dudley Crabtree at KeyWestMugshots.com.
Oh, good.
Wonderful. Oh, he's not nearly as dumb as I would imagine. I mean, he looks, don't get me wrong, he looks dumb. But he's not like Okie Finokie dumb. Here's the best part is it just says in huge, huge letters, people shown on this website may not have been found guilty in a court of law.
Well, yeah.
Yes, he was, so it's got a picture of him. I can't quite tell, other charges. Let's see if there are other charges listed here for Mr. Crabtree. Oh no! If you go to if you go to other charges, no, it just takes you. Oh my God! The people arrested. And here's the thing: you think about Key West, and you think Jimmy Buffett. You think, yeah, you know, you think wealthy. You think money. You think glamorous. You think these people are either coming from somewhere else to commit their crimes, or they possibly have some branch of law enforcement in Key West that is just responsible for rounding up the ugly and keeping them off the streets. Because even in mugshot terms, these people are hideous. I strongly encourage, if you get a chance, you go to God damn, these people are all horrid looking. Oh my God.
Well, Florida criminals are some of the most horrid criminals.
There are some of the weirdest looking people I have ever seen in my life at this website. Seriously, it is just like it sounds. It's a Key West Mugshots. That's KEYWEST, KeyWestMugshots.com.
Maybe we could get them as a sponsor.
Are you at KeyWestMugshots.com?
No, yeah, let me go.
When you get a chance, go to KeyWestMugshots.com and then go to page 2 of the mugshots that are under book. It really is just, there's really some fine shining examples of humanity here, including people who just, okay, I swear to God, there's a guy here who's a Gringotts. He's a Gringotts goblin. There's no lie. Okay, I'm gonna isolate this. I'm gonna isolate this photo right here, and I'm gonna send this to you. Okay. There is a guy here who I swear to God, his job is guarding Harry Potter's Harry Potter's gold. All right, let's see. I'm just gonna. I don't even know how I would send this to you. I'm actually gonna email this to you, and then I'll post some of these online. Let's see.
Oh yeah, those are some unpleasant looking people.
They're really, isn't that, that's a fine shining example of humanity there. Hold on a second.
Oh wow.
Shot.
Are you talking about the guy with the really weird long face?
Well, there's him. Okay, I just sent you a mugshot. I just sent this to your email. Okay. If you want to check your DonnaRickEmerson.com email. Okay. Tell me if this guy doesn't look like he ought to be some sort of like a Rowling creation. Because he's got like the weird, everything about this guy says orc.
Got like too,
boy,
many,
this is,
too many windows.
There's several people here who look like their heads were just like they were.
Yeah.
Like they resisted coming out of the womb, and the forceps, mm-hmm, were just put a little too firmly around them to draw them out of the.
Oh my God.
See what I'm saying?
Yes.
Okay.
He looks like an orc.
He looks exactly like.
Oh my God.
Harry Potter, huh? Fourth vault to the left. I gotta post that at Rick Emerson's show.
He's the guy that you like. Your car breaks down, and you find like this house in the middle of nowhere with a rickety porch. And just as you're walking up to it, he walks out with a shotgun in his hand,
that's
wearing
what I'm
a stained undershirt. And you're like, I'm so afraid now.
All right, I'm gonna put this on Facebook.
Oh my God,
Key West mugshot.
So which one was Crabtree? Do we know?
He's actually not. He's not identified by name there. I just googled his. I googled his name and went to the first result was for Key West mugshots. Key West mugshot or Gringotts goblin. Goblin. You be the judge. All right, then I will.
So are awesome. We going, since I guess Greg and Sarah were here earlier, are we going a little extra long today to entertain the people?
I don't know. Do we have things in particular we need to get? I mean, I'm not saying we can. I'm just saying, is there a particular reason for that?
No, I'm just asking because I actually, Little Adam from Minuteman Printing is going to be swinging by to meet you and be all fanboy on us and bring us our stickers.
What time is he coming by?
I'm just trying to tell him that we'd probably be done around 4-ish.
The thing I realized is I need to actually go home and be back here again around 4:30 because because the person who lent me the Kindle is not going to be swinging by to pick up that Kindle around 4:30. So I need to at some point break, go home, come back with the Kindle by around 4:30. So
okay,
well, I don't know. We'll figure it out as we go along. All right, there we go. Let's end that Hick Watch. There's, by the way, you can see that guy's mugshot at facebook.com/Rick Emerson. That's facebook.com/Rick Emerson.
Makes me feel so good. Well, I put a little chew in my mouth, go spitting, slobbering on around the house. That Copenhagen makes me feel so good. How about you?
That's wonderful. Fantastic. All right, here is Don Taylor.
A sovereign citizen in Virginia was arrested and charged with five misdemeanors after a bizarre encounter with a state police officer where he called himself a free citizen on a free highway and gave multiple fake names. Michael Creath Jones, 31, was pulled over last week by State Trooper T.M. Simmons because he had a fake painted license plate with the words Virginia and private use handwritten on it. The News Virginia newspaper reports that according to the search warrant affidavit, Jones locked his doors and barely cracked open his window and refused to identify himself. He told Simmons he was a free citizen on a free highway and provided different names. The trooper asked for identification at least 10 times. Jones also said he did not have to provide a driver's license and only got out of the car when Simmons threatened to arrest him and break the car window. Jones struggled when Simmons tried to handcuff him. He was later charged with resisting arrest, obstruction of justice with force, driving without a license, having an expired inspection sticker, and defective equipment. Simmons said he found documents relating to the Sovereign Citizens Movement and their activities in the trunk of the car, as well as a Geiger counter. Sovereign Citizens are a loosely organized anti-government group who believe all forms of government and laws are illegitimate. Some sovereign citizens, when confronted with law enforcement, have become violent, while others have sought revenge through paper terrorism, like several in New York who were recently convicted of mail fraud.
So this is one of those like Dale Gribble guys. Yes. Who believes that he shall obey the authority of no court that has the gold-fringed flag hanging.
Yes. Exactly.
All right. That's wonderful. These are the kind of guys that every now and again, about every 6 months, they will bust one of them, and it's always in Idaho for some reason, where it's just like there's a guy living in one of those like Airstream trailers, you know, and then there's like seven other guys living in small wooden huts that all call him like Führer, you know, or something, and it's he's decided that the Constitution also says that he can't pay income tax, you know. So all right.
I don't suppose you happened to see South Park last night, did
no,
you?
No, I didn't even. Yes. That's one of those things that again, except for the human centipad episode, which I made a note to watch because it just seemed like it was going to be the best and worst thing ever. I end up watching all of the South Parks, but never when they actually air live. I am in that way, I think, probably like some folks who listen to this show, where they hear it all, but they don't ever hear it when it actually airs, because it just seems to be omnipresent now. You can just kind of get it hot and cold running all the time. Yeah. So what was...
Cartman was very, very angry because the school had posted the penis sizes of all of the children on the wall. And it turned out, of course, it was not their actual penis sizes. It was the amount that they had grown since the previous year's health checkup. So Cartman insisted on measuring everyone's wieners and then posting the actual results. Then, of course, he got in trouble for posting penis sizes on the wall because he had no... And he got sent to anger management. All of which was very convoluted, and I couldn't figure out where it was going and why they were doing it until he actually gets into anger management, and it turns out that basically it was all a way of saying he's in anger management with a white rapper kid with his knees down around his pants down around his knees, who can barely speak English because he's too busy talking street, a big buff guy who drives like an SUV, a Tea Party guy, the angry Chinese man who owns shitty Chinese food.
Yes,
yeah.
Right.
And this huge butch lesbian. And it turns out that basically it was a way of saying that all of these people are crazy and don't make any sense because they are concerned about the sizes of their penises. And really, ultimately, it just came down to a way of illustrating how completely fundamentally nuts the Tea Party guys are.
Right.
And that nothing that they're angry about makes any sense whatsoever. But it took a really long time to get to that point.
You know, I never really thought that I would live in a world, and I'm not complaining about this, where... the idea that the idea that there was in fact like a third grader who was measuring and then posting all the penis sizes for the all the other kids in the school because he was upset that his own penis size had been posted and was not of was of disproportionately small size compared to others, that wouldn't in fact be the most notable thing about the episode. That would just be the buildup.
Right.
That would just be the MacGuffin, the mechanism by which something else happened. So we're in the third episode of South Park for this season, right? Because the human centipede was the season premiere.
I think that might have actually been fourth or fifth.
So
at this
third or
point.
Fourth. So yeah, I'm just so totally behind with that show. I did get an email from somebody just the other day.
That was the fourth episode of the season.
I got an email just the other day. Somebody was sending me something about the Book of Mormon, the touring production of Book of Mormon, which is actually going to start. I think it's next February, something like that. I think it's either February or March of 2012, the Book of Mormon goes on the road, and it's going to be sort of touring the country.
That's soon.
Yeah.
That's quick.
Well, I think they must realize just what, you know, that it's just money in the bank. And yeah. plus the Book of Mormon is not like a lot of other – it's not like a lot of other shows. I mean, it does – because of the South Park thing and because it's got so much buzz and because it's had so many, you know, articles written about it, it's had so much attention, that that's a thing that they could get on the road now. They don't have to build up the anticipation for it. Because I think a lot of Broadway shows, they have to let themselves establish, because otherwise it's like nobody in the rest of the country is even going to be aware of them or buy tickets. Book of Mormon doesn't really have that problem for a lot of reasons. And plus, it just got 14 Tony nominations.
Oh, my God.
It came one shy, I think, of actually tying the record for the most nominations ever, which went to the producers.
Do you know, and you probably don't, but do you know whether or not the guy who plays either the actual lead or just one of the two leads was also in Avenue Q?
I don't. I know that, the two leads, I know one of the leads is from The Daily Show, and I forget his name, but the guy who plays Elder Cunningham, short of heavy set, like curly-haired guy, he was on The Daily Show, among other things. The guy who plays Elder Grant, who is the sort of like, he's like the prototypical like blonde, you know, all-American boy guy, he may have been in Avenue Q. And I think, I don't have the playbill or whatever with me, but yeah, it's entirely possible.
I was listening to the music because they were streaming it on NPR, and I was listening to the music, and one of the actors sounds so much like one of the actors from Avenue Q. But
it wouldn't surprise me, because I know that most of the people on the cast have Broadway experience, and of course Robert Lopez is one of the co-creators of Book of Mormon,
right.
The Avenue Q guy, so I would not be surprised at all were that the case. Let's do one more here, and then we'll take a little urine break for everyone.
All right, let's do our Corpse Watch.
All right, here's your Corpse Watch for, and then by the way, and then, because we had the story about something gumbo. What was his name? What was the Crabtree guy?
Dudley. Carl Dudley Crabtree.
All right. Because of that, we'll do. Somebody requested that we do that we play the Paul and Storm Nugget Man song.
Oh,
so
yeah.
So we'll have a little Paul and Storm Nugget Man action after this. Here's your Corpse Watch for Thursday on the Rick Emerson Radio Program.
I'm digging up bones. I'm digging up bones. Exhuming things that's better left alone. I'm resurrecting memories of love that's dead and gone. Yet tonight I'm sitting alone, digging up bones.
There is your Corpse Watch. Is it the second day in a row we've had a Corpse Watch? Did we have one yesterday?
What are you going to do? Remember, we went through that stretch of clown stories.
That's
like
true.
they trend.
All right, here's your Corpse Watch for Thursday.
The owner of an Arizona crematory admitted to keeping human remains stacked outside in the heat, in some cases for as long as 3 days,
okay.
In violation of state standards. Frank Lambert, owner of Allstate Crematory, told the State Board of Funeral Directors and Embalmers that 49 of the 74 bodies in his care were not refrigerated properly, and that some were stacked in vans and cars. Board Director Rudy Thomas said, "We were completely appalled. I was surprised and embarrassed for the industry because this is not the norm."
And where is this at?
Arizona.
Okay. It gets warm in Arizona.
Yes, it does. Lambert said he could not. Arizona law states that if a crematory is unable to cremate human remains after taking them into custody, they should maintain or store any of the remains in a secure holding facility at 38 degrees. Thomas said not only were the bodies not refrigerated, but the containers of remains were actually stacked, allowing the remains to be exposed if the containers fell open. Maggots were also seen on the boxes and the surrounding floor. Thomas said, if you're unable to refrigerate them, then you leave them with the funeral homes or seek assistance from another source. Lambert kept accepting the bodies from different funeral homes, despite the fact he couldn't take care of them.
Now, what was the reason that he was not able to cremate them? I mean, was it just, how hard could that process? It's like a one-step process.
He told the board members on Tuesday night that he was trying to do the best he could. As the sole cremationist, Lambert only had help transporting the bodies to and from the crematory. He also serves as the funeral director. He was averaging about 15 cremations a day before the bodies started to pile up.
So this is, he just didn't want to say no to the business.
Right.
Because, of course, you know, that's money. And so, but he laid off all his help, or he's just understaffed at the moment. Maybe everybody's on vacation. And so he's like, I guess you say yes to one body too many, and then it's two, and then he just can't say no.
And then you've got 49.
Yeah.
Last month, a repairman working to replace the windshield of Lambert's van, which is used to transport remains, noticed a strong smell coming from the vehicle and called the police.
God damn.
Lambert, when the board member guy, he was shown pictures and video depicting bodies outside of the vans instead of in a refrigerator system. The pictures also showed maggots on the crematory floor. When he went to investigate, he found that Lambert had cremated all the bodies, leaving nothing out of the ordinary. But when presented with the photographic evidence, Lambert did not deny any of it and just said he was doing the best he could.
Is this like the thing where tonight, right before my wife gets back, I'm going to be at home being like a whirlwind, a dervish of activity throughout the house, trying to get everything cleaned up and put away?
Burning all the bodies, yes.
Yes, that. Cleaning up the maggots, sure. So like as the man is on his way there, he's just sort of a da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, like a sorcerer's apprentice kind of a thing.
Shoving the bodies behind the refrigerator. Where no one will see.
Oh, God. All right. So there you go. And of course, it had to be in Arizona where it's like 140 degrees outside, like all the time. This is like that. What was it in Georgia or Alabama a couple years ago? Remember there was that guy where it's like people were taking their bodies to be disposed of at some funeral home, and it turned out that he wasn't disposed. He was just sticking them in the woods out back, and they ended up finding like 300 bodies or something. It was like the Labor Day telethon tote board. Like they kept and our new result is bam, 105, and they just kept finding just like acres of dead bodies in the back of this guy's place. And it's like if these weirdos in these other stories who are always like, I don't know, like digging up a girl so they can violate her remains, or maybe like cooking a guy into a stew, if they can find somebody to help, with them, and that's horrible. And this is only kind of horrible and only sort of illegal. You figure he must have.
I think I'd be able to get like an intern.
That's the thing. It's like it speaks poorly of his social circle if he can't get a guy to at least come by and just give him, just a little bit of a, just till he gets caught up, just so we can get back to zero.
There's also the issue of how big his oven is and how many bodies. And also, you're only supposed to like cook one at a time. That's the thing, is that every once in a while there's a story, and this happens every couple of years. There'll be a story about a crematorium that gets dinged because they'll get backed up like this, and they'll just start piling a bunch of bodies in at one time and then just divvying up the ashes. And then people get upset because, it's not like, Grandma Jane. It's Grandma Jane and four other guys.
This ash doesn't look anything like Dad. By the way, the idea that you can just sort of pile everything in there and then it's going to work, which at a certain point then also like overtaxes, the ovens, and then they just don't work properly. This is not unlike yesterday when we came in, and I haven't had a chance to clarify this because Greg and Sarah were gone when we got here today. But so it was a little bit warm here in the studio yesterday because they've got the blower for the air conditioners fixed, but the actual air conditioning element of it is not yet. So it's blowing air from the outside in, but of course if it's hot outside, it's just blowing kind of warm air in and da da da. So it's better than it was, but it still gets a little cozy in here, a little toasty. And it does appear for all the world that Greg and Sarah were trying to cool down the studio by just leaving the refrigerator door open, because the refrigerator door was actually propped open. They had taken a chair and they had moved a chair over to hold the door of their tiny little dorm fridge open. And that was the mechanism by which they were attempting to cool the studio.
Yeah.
Which is a thing that I think we kind of all disproved when we were like, in third grade or something. But
that
I
doesn't really work.
No, I don't really know that works as such. Let's see. Okay, so there you go. So there's your Corpse Watch. So we'll do this. Do the Corpse Watch. We'll play a little Paul and Storm here. Come back on the other side. Stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Don't go anywhere.
I'm digging up bones. I'm digging up bones. Exhuming things that's better left alone. But I'm resurrecting memories of love that's dead and tonight I'm sitting alone, digging up bones.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Robert C. Baker died on a Monday. We all know his work, although few knew his name. A Cornell professor who taught poultry science, forever enshrined in the Poultry Hall of Fame. 84 years
years worth of food innovation. Chicken dogs, turkey dogs, and turkey ham. Beyond them all stands Baker's greatest creation. For Baker begat chicken nuggets for man. '50s changed the way children and college kids eat when he invented a way to get breading to adhere much better to raw chicken meat. His new method led fast food chains in the 80s to develop and market a new bite-sized snack food made from mechanically recovered meat and anti-foaming products. Reconstituted meat slurry and extra chicken skin for its binding properties. Burgers is mourning with Popeye. The colonel has arranged a 21-gun salute. The churches are silent but for Wendy's weeping. And Ronald has hung up his big yellow clown suit. Robert C. Baker's last will was specific, that his bones be removed and he be ground up real fine, and to place his remains into small cardboard coffins and bury the pieces six at a time.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
All my life I've been searching for something. Something never comes, never leads to nothing. Nothing satisfies, but I'm getting close. Closer to the prize at the end of the rope. All night long, I dream. Twist something to something never comes, never leads to nothing. Nothing satisfies, but I'm getting close, closer to the prize at the end of the rope. All night long, I dream of the day when it comes around and it's taken away. Leaves me with the feeling that I feel the most. Feel it come to life when I see your ghost. Then I'm done, done, on to the next one, done. Done, and I'm on to the next one, done. Done, and I'm on to the next one, done. Done, and I'm on to the next one, done.
Listening to the Emerson News Network.
Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-505-6964. That's 503-505-6964. You can also email if you like. It's Rick at rickemerson.com. And let's see. My bank printing. There we go. Incidentally, join us tomorrow when we'll have Mr. Big Jim Willig in the studio with us for another installment of Humor Me Comedy 101. Tomorrow talking about the life and career and work of one Mr. Steve Martin. That's tomorrow. Steve Martin, the subject of Humor Me Comedy 101. I'm printing out that thing that I mentioned. I'll get to you in just a second. Oh, God, I did that thing right. There's got to be some setting on these pages where you can just say, don't print the goddamn comments.
Oh.
Because then what happens is you get page one of, 75 or something. Because now I'm printing out all of the stupid comments, which are things that I don't ever need to see. All right. Well, in any event. Still to come today, we have your Clergy Watch on the way, we'll do a handful of these additional Sid and Marty Krofft songs because somebody keeps predicting which ones I'm going to be playing. So we'll do a couple of those here in just a few. This, however, at the news desk is wait.
I know which one I'm hoping for.
Dawn Taylor. There we go.
This is Dawn Taylor.
Well, the White House said it is ending its long-running practice of having presidents reenact televised speeches for news photographers following major addresses to the country, a little-known arrangement that fed suggestions of fakery when Barack Obama announced the death of Osama bin Laden. After Obama's live late-evening address from the East Room of the White House on May 1st, five photographers were ushered in to shoot pictures as the president stood at the podium and reread a few lines of his speech, a practice that news organizations have protested for years. Even though the Associated Press and other news outlets said in captions to the photos that they were taken after the president delivered his address, many people who saw them may have assumed they depicted the speech itself. That raised questions of whether news organizations are staging events. The issue also drew attention when Jason Reed of Reuters, one of the photographers who took part, blogged about the assignment, saying the president, quote, reenacted the walkout and first 30 seconds of the statement for us.
Well, why didn't they just say they weren't going to do it, though? I mean, that's if the Associated Press really has a problem with it, why didn't they say, well, get bent? I mean, let us take photographs of the actual thing or you don't get your picture in the paper, you know, Mr. Killin' Bin Laden guy.
I
don't care, but if they care, they should have just said we're not going to do it, as opposed to doing this half measure of saying, well, we're going to do it and then snark about it in tiny print on the page.
The problem is that everybody has to say they're going to do it. And they are competitors. And so it doesn't, you know, if just the Associated Press or just Reuters or whoever like put their foot down and say, we're not going to do this anymore. Everybody else goes, well, okay, then you lose out and
I
we
guess
get the picture.
You're the
you
one
don't.
Organization that doesn't have the story.
You know,
then, yeah.
Speaking as someone, you know, who's been a film critic for a long time, and there are a lot of problems that film critics have with the way publicists and studios treat film critics and the way they do stuff. And often, you know, film critics will say stuff like, well, what if we just said we won't review your movies then if you don't stop treating us this way?
Right.
Well, the problem is, everyone has to do it, you know, and frankly, they're not that well organized.
Right. Well, and there's always going to be one organization that then just says, hey, wait, but then if we go along with it, then we'll be the sole group to have the pictures of the president. OK.
So Obama spokesman Josh Earnest said late Wednesday that they've concluded the arrangement is a bad idea. He said the administration is open to working out some new arrangement with photographers. The practice of reenactments has a long history. Washington veterans say President Harry Truman would deliver speeches over radio and then repeat them again for newsreel cameras. Doug Mills, a photographer for the New York Times, who was on duty May 1st, said he has seen every president from Ronald Reagan to Obama take time after a speech so still photographers could get their shots. You know, it said the presence of still photographers with cameras that make noise can be a distraction to the president, particularly in cramped settings like the Oval Office. Mills said all it takes is for some photographer to drop something and the president reacts to it and it looks terrible on television.
That's great.
So they don't allow the cameras in there while he's doing the specific thing, but then they come in later and do it. But now, apparently, they've decided they're tired of everyone complaining about
That's what I need. I need a commander-in-chief who's distracted by the presence of a Nikon somewhere in the room. All right. You can't actually speak and be photographed at the same time, or it all just falls apart. Here's that thing that I was going to that I mentioned earlier. We can get to that here whenever it is you have the opportunity. Let's see. Somebody asked about Legion of News. Yes, so Legion of News. Speaking of reenacting things, somebody says, "Was today's Legion of News the one you put on Facebook about taping last night?" Yes, it was. So today's Legion of News, which will I think may already be up at iTunes. I don't know about that. I sent that to Cascadia last night because they were doing they have some sort of thing over there, and so we taped today's Legion of News last night, but now this if you're hearing this now, this is in fact live,
right?
If presuming you're hearing it at like 2:45 on Thursday afternoon, I don't know why I bother to clarify any of these things. I can't even keep track of it myself.
Thursday's Legion of News was not live. And we had many opportunities over the course of the show to actually mention that. And there was a point at which we never had. And I realized, I was thinking, maybe Rick doesn't want to mention that this is taped.
It never really occurred to me one way or the other. I think by the time last night rolled around, I think I was just in the get it done mindset.
Yeah.
Like, I think I was just finish it, just get it in the can so I could go home.
And then we were keeping our fingers crossed that some like really huge event didn't happen.
Seriously.
You know, like just some massive like earthquake or some like insanely famous person getting like, you know, shot by a guy in a clown suit or something, because then people would think, why didn't you talk about that? That was huge. But
what can you do? Hey, when is the rapture thing supposed to be happening? Is that Saturday?
Yes,
okay.
Saturday.
All right.
At 6 p.m., no matter what time.
No matter where you are.
Time your thing.
All right, excellent.
Put out milk and cookies for Jesus.
By the way, the name of the place in South Park you were trying to think of is City Walk. So there you go. Don Taylor.
Let's do our clergy watch.
Here's your clergy watch for Thursday right here on the Rick Emerson Radio. Wait. There we go, program.
Well, I guess it would be nice if I could touch your body. I know not everybody has got a body like you. Because I got to have faith.
Here is your clergy watch for Thursday right here on the Rick Emerson Radio program.
A 5-year study commissioned by the nation's Roman Catholic bishops to provide a definitive answer as to what caused the church's sexual abuse crisis has concluded that neither the all-male celibate priesthood nor homosexuality were to blame. Instead, the report says, and of course, keep in mind, this is a report commissioned by the Roman Catholic Church. The report says that the abuse occurred because of priests who were poorly prepared and monitored and were under stress and came into their jobs during the social and sexual turmoil of the 60s and 70s. Known occurrences of sexual abuse of minors by priests rose sharply during those decades, the report found, and the problem grew worse when the church's hierarchy responded by showing more care for the perpetrators than the victims.
So some guys chew their fingernails, some guys sodomize altar boys.
Yes.
Okay.
The New York Times refers to this as the blame Woodstock explanation.
Yes.
That's been floated by bishops since the church was engulfed by scandal in the United States in 2002 and by Pope Benedict XVI after it erupted in Europe in 2010. But this study is likely to be regarded as the most authoritative analysis of the scandal in the Catholic Church in America. The study was initiated in 2006 and conducted by a team of researchers at the John Jay College of Criminal Justice in New York City and cost $1.8 million. About half was provided by the bishops, with additional money contributed by Catholic organizations and foundations. The report was to be released Wednesday by the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops in Washington, but the Religion News Service published an account of the report on its website on Tuesday. A copy of the report was also obtained by the New York Times.
I'm unclear about this. So is it stress was brought on because they were in the middle of social and society, social and sexual upheaval in America or
yes.
Everywhere? And as a result, they said, I turn on the news and I just see stories that unnerve me. And I'm so deeply disturbed about all the goings on in the world. Get me a small child.
And I think it was like the whole sexual revolution thing. And they were like being celibate at a time when we were undergoing a worldwide sexual revolution of sorts. Homosexual men began entering the seminaries in noticeable numbers from the late 70s through the 80s. And by the time they entered the priesthood in the mid-80s, reports of sexual abuse of minors by priests had begun to drop off and then to level off. So if anything, the abuse decreased as more gay priests began serving in the church. Many more boys than girls were victimized, not because the perpetrators were gay, but simply because the priests had more access to boys than to girls. In one of the most counterintuitive findings, the report said that fewer than 5% of the abusive priests exhibited behavior consistent with pedophilia, which defines it as a psychiatric disorder that is characterized by recurrent fantasies, urges, and behaviors about prepubescent children. The report says, thus, it is inaccurate to refer to abusers as pedophile priests.
And then somebody says, or maybe, just maybe, the church was able to squash all those reports for the previous few hundred years so nobody heard about it. But with the development of media, the reports became more and more common. And of course, that would have coincided with, you know, like the 60s, 70s, 80s, or the, you know, the true rise of mass media in America. I mean, theoretically speaking.
And maybe, just maybe, being celibate and spending your entire life worried about what an imaginary being thinks of you know, your sexual thoughts and feelings at every moment of the day might make you a little bit twisted.
It is kind of one of those things where if you squeeze the balloon, it just bulges out somewhere else, it seems like. So,
yeah.
All right, there you go. There's your clergy watch for Thursday right here on the Rick Emerson radio program.
Because I gotta have faith.
Excellent. Here is Don Taylor at the news desk.
The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention is a big, serious government agency with a big, serious job protecting public health from threats ranging from hurricanes to bird flu. So when doctors in Atlanta warned people this week about how to prepare for a zombie apocalypse, the world took notice. That's right. I said zombie apocalypse, Dr. Ali S. Khan wrote on the CDC website this week, adding casually that Resident Evil is his personal favorite zombie movie. As it happens, Khan is one of the nation's top-ranking public health professionals, and he believes the living dead are about to claw their way out of the graves and start chewing on your brain. But he and his communications team recently noticed what they'd want you to do if the world really did suddenly go Night of the Living Dead is pretty much the same thing they want you to do in case of a hurricane or another major pandemic.
Let me understand this. They're using zombies then as a teaching metaphor to help people understand things that might otherwise seem complex or overwhelming.
Yes.
All right.
Yes, they are.
Geniuses.
From that realization to the decision to actually put up a blog post was a short step, Khan said Thursday, apparently failing to also mention that other people had already had this idea and
yes.
There are already other educational organizations who use this. that he just stole it.
The government. They're not really, you know, the government isn't really known for being first on the job with anything.
Yeah. He floated the idea of what to do in a meteor strike on Earth not long after becoming director of CDC's Office of Public Health Preparedness 8 months ago. So his staff knew he was open to, quote, novel and creative ideas to engage the public.
Wait. So he was not just a teacher about how to conduct yourself during a disaster, but during a meteor strike.
Yeah,
so it was like a full-on Night of the Comet thing.
His first thing was apparently he got into office and he sat down with everyone and said, okay, here's what I want to do. I want to go on the web and I want to talk about what we would do if a comet hit the Earth. And then somebody said, yeah, you know, zombies are really hot now. He said, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're gonna do zombies.
The kids, they love zombies. They love comets.
Yeah, the CDC got a question about zombies during an online chat about radiation leaks related to the Daiichi nuclear plant, and they saw a traffic spike after they answered it. So Khan and his communications team knew they'd found a way to get the public interested in disaster preparedness.
So apparently, I guess the actual CDC website crashed too while they were doing this. Of all of the actual bits of information that the CDC offers you and all of the actual advice they put up, this was the thing that apparently actually destroyed their infrastructure. By the way, this is a good time to mention, speaking of Night of the Comet, pardon me, I just cannot quit. I've got like an allergy thing going on over here or something. Is it dusty where you are?
Over here on the side of the
table?
Yes. No.
Kind of like a whole weird allergy pollen dirt dust. I think I may have done that thing of actually having some dust or some whatever, you know, get like inhaling like just some detritus and then going to like doing that thing that I know I shouldn't do, going to like scratch my eyes or my nose or whatever, but then with the hand that actually had the dust on it. So in just a moment as we move to the next door, I'm actually going to step up for just a second and no one wants to hear me blow my nose. That's a thing that no one wants to hear. No one anywhere at all.
No man should be privy to the horrors of Rick.
A sound that no man should hear. So I'll tell you what, I'm actually going to do a little thing here. We'll duck out in just a second, then I'll come back and I'll mention a thing about Night of the Comet and then I could do the hold music or you could share a story with the people while I'm stepping out of this studio for a second. What would you prefer?
I want to hear the cold music. It makes me happy.
Okay, we'll be back in just like 30 seconds here. Hold on. I got to tell you, there are a few things that'll make me feel more disgusted with myself than nose blowing, you know. And I know that it's a natural thing that everybody does from time to time, Don. It's just that is one of those things where it's like, I think everybody has had the conversation about, you know, like if you are perhaps you were out for the evening and you are at an eating and drinking establishment, or you are out on the town, and perhaps you make the acquaintance of a young man or a young lady. You go back to their place for some sort of Scrabble. Close proximity encounter, and then if one realizes one has to use the bathroom, then you have to think, you know, it's a whole thing of like, how do I avoid making any sound of any kind in here? How do I make sure that there's no noise of any sort that escapes through the door? And for me, not quite as bad, but nearly in the same level is the whole thing of blowing my nose, which I just I get a lot of, you know, there's a lot of resonance that comes from inside a nose like this. It really is its own echo chamber. It's basically, if I blow my nose, it's basically like I'm blowing that huge thing from the Ricola commercial that just like that, the huge like horn that goes down the side of the Alps. And so as a result, it's a lot of like, how can I make sure that no one actually hears me do that? And I am just so incredibly self-conscious about it. And plus, it's just...
No, I actually heard you. You turned the mics out. You were out there. The music was playing. I had my headphones on.
And the bathroom door was shut.
And I still heard you.
Yeah.
So that was quite resonant.
It's a heck of a nose that I've got here. But, so that is the thing that I go... And plus, the other thing, if you're blowing your nose, sometimes it's just like, you know, you get a little dust or you just got like, you know, whatever, stray nostril hair, which I get every now and again. And then sometimes, usually when you're you're least expecting it, you go to blow your nose, and then it's just like, and then it's just like someone draining a bathtub full of mud, and it's like you don't want to hear that, you don't, and you don't want anybody else to have to hear that either. It's just, yeah, I can't.
I've had a lot less. I've become, I'm sort of obsessive about using the neti pot every two or three days to like flush out my sinuses, and have had far less sneezy, nose blowy sinus problems. Because ever since I got that just horrible, horrible sinus infection that one year, and I had no idea that such horrors could like grow and fester inside your face, I was unaware of what was possible to just incubate inside the cavities of my own head. That after that, it's like, I swear, it was like, as God is my witness, that is never happening again.
Well, that's when you realize, you hear those stories about how when Elvis died, they found like 70 pounds of like, you know, they found like 70 pounds of undigested meat in his colon. Yes. And he realized that there is some sort of some nasal equivalent to that, just sort of percolating inside your head at all times.
Well, because I've told this, I remember, I think David Walker was here and we were talking the one day about sinus infection stuff. And the thing is that, yeah, I had like the entire side of my face just felt hot and burned, and it was just packed, and I couldn't blow my nose on like one side, and it was horrible. And I was sitting in the living room, and I knew I had a sinus infection. I was going, I don't know what to do. And I started using the neti pot, but it wasn't going through because stuff was going. And I'd never really had a real honest to God sinus infection before. And I was sitting in the living room and blowing my nose and trying to fix it. I just blowing my nose. And then there was this, yeah, that noise. And I went, and that just resonated throughout my whole head. And I looked down at the tissue and I was like, holy crap.
Oh, God, something bad is about to happen.
It was like I had blown a full raw oyster out of my face. And there didn't seem to be any.
That's the worst thing you have ever said.
And I'm not kidding. It was exactly like that. Which is, and I was like, Patrick, look at this. And he was like, no, don't make me look at that. And I was like, seriously, look at this. If I had had my iPhone then, I would have taken a picture of it and posted on the way. It was a thing of mystery and horror. It was like, it was Lovecraftian. It was so awful. And so yes, so from now on, I have become vigilant about nasal cavity health.
I'm certainly not writing that phrase on Twitter right now. It was like I had blown a full raw oyster out of my face.
Yeah, this is the same thing that apparently, I think earlier today, I also said, I used to lick a lot of things I shouldn't when I was young. So,
oyster out of my face. All right.
I mean, it actually had like a thin membrane that was holding it. It was horrific.
No, don't. Why do you got to be? Yeah. Why is it got to be like that? Okay. All right, ick.
Yeah. Then you start like, you know, going on the web and looking these things up and going, well, what was this? How did this happen?
Well, how would you possibly look that up on the web? What keywords would you use to Google?
You start with
viscous.
You start with just the phrase sinus infection, and you start, and then you realize that you have like our sinuses are a lot bigger and take up a lot more real estate inside our head than we're aware of. And that, yeah, you start like growing bacteria in there. It's warm and moist, and oh my God, horrible things can happen. Horrible, horrible things.
Somebody is saying that the human body is disgusting enough without Dawn's helpful descriptions. Please make her stop. I should say this. So we mentioned Night of the Comet here right before I went in to do the aforementioned nose blowing. So Friday, May 27th, which is a week from tomorrow, rather. Friday, May 27th, the Hollywood Theater. So our friend Siegfried, they're actually going to be doing a double feature that is next Friday as part of the ongoing the May of the Dead thing, which you can find out more about at mayofthedead.com. And it's going to be Night of the Comet and Demons, which is the Argento film, Dario Argento.
Yeah.
Have you seen Demons?
Not for a long time.
Demons is great. If Demons is I'm almost certain this is that I'm thinking of the same film. Demons, I think, is the zombie film that actually takes place itself in a theater. If I remember correctly, it's a zombie film that takes place in a theater while people are watching a zombie film. And I'm unclear about why it's called Demons, because it's a zombie film. I think it may have been one of those things where there was actually that movie called Zombies that came out that year.
The translating from Italian.
When they ported it over. So, but it's a double feature of Demons and Night of the Comet, and that's going to be happening Friday, May 27th, a week from tomorrow, at the Hollywood Theater. So we'll have more details on that in just a skosh, and that's up at mayofthedead.com. Cheryl wants it to be known, by the way, that Demons is the only film that she has actually not been able to make it all the way through. So just the only movie she has not Now that Demons isn't the one where the guy gets the Demons isn't the one where the guy gets the big wooden shard in the eye, is it? You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I don't think so.
I don't think so. I think that was actually the movie Zombie, Z-U-M-B-I, where there's the zombie wrestling the shark at one point.
Well,
so
I'm just thinking now at this point, Cheryl just has to go then.
Yeah,
then
no,
she'll
really.
She'll be in a theater and she'll have to sit there and she won't be able to leave.
No, because then you can check it off your list. You can feel better about yourself as a human being. You feel like you've finally resolved. She said that she made it through a lot of Cheryl's mom. I got to say this. I don't know. I mean, I don't know a whole lot about Cheryl's upbringing or her childhood. But first of all, her mom is like way cooler than I am, or way cooler than most people like in general. Because there was that greatest songs ever made that we did a while back, and I had played that song by Magnetic Fields, the song Book of Love, and Cheryl. I don't know how old her mother is, but Cheryl is Cheryl and I are, I guess roughly the I actually don't. I'm not even necessarily sure that I know how old Cheryl is. I think we're roughly the same age. So her mom is, however many decades older than that. But her mom, it turns out, is a huge Magnetic Fields fan. And then her mom says, and I love it when he plays all that Social Distortion. That Mike Ness, he's so dreamy. And so it turns out like her mom has got like all this like great music taste that you wouldn't really expect. But Cheryl growing up was either shown by her family or just her family never stopped from watching them. All of those like Suspiria and all of those like classic horror films, like a lot of those like the Italian films and like I think it was Dementia 13? Is that the film I'm thinking of? And just all of those like great either foreign feeling kind of films that came out during. There was that bumper crop of movies, and it was like, and that was around the same time that there was like Hush Hush, Sweet Charlotte, and Whatever Happened to Baby Jane, and all of those movies that are being put out. Which I don't think I saw a lot of those until I was somewhat older. But I think her family was much more open minded than mine was.
Cheryl is like that sort of calm, dark pool that
that's
has
exactly
the,
what she
the,
is.
The depths that you don't expect. She's very nice, and she's very pleasant, and she has excellent social skills. And then you find out that she has these depths of weirdness that you wouldn't possibly expect, which
is
awesome.
She's like that deep lake that's just outside the mines of Mira or whatever that thing is in the where the Watcher lives.
Yes.
She's
by the way,
just like that.
Demons was produced by Dario Argento, but it was directed by Lamberto Bava, Mario Bava's son. So, just as an aside, I am a huge Mario Bava fan, by the way.
So she said that she'll be in the lobby eating popcorn during that film. But yes, it'll be Night of the Comet, which is Lisa Desjardins' favorite film from that genre, and then also Demons. So that'll be Friday, May 27th, the Hollywood Theater. Our good friend Siegfried. Putting that on, so we'll have more details on that in the immediate future. All right, hey, real quickly before we do anything else, and I know that you, we often lament that we pull news and we prepare stories and we don't actually get to them. So I'm just I'm keeping today's show kind of loose just so we can get to as many of those things as possible. But I wanted to do this. I wanted to just do a couple of these back to back because you made the observation about the H.R. Puffin Stuff theme song that it just tells you everything you need to know. I mean that it's not even that it's awkward, it's just it's like awkward expository dialogue, but it's just awkward expository musical dialogue because it gives you the entire setup. So all of the Sid and Marty Krofft shows are all done in the same sort of template, the same kind of formula. And so just to as an example, so we'll start with this is the H.R. Puffin Stuff intro that I think you said you were playing yesterday on on Ham-Fisted Radio. So let's see where and there we go.
Push your bend when things get rough. H.R. Puffin Stuff can't do a little 'cause he can't do enough. Once upon a summertime, just a dream from yesterday, a boy in this magic golden flute heard a boat from off the bay.
Come and play with me, Jimmy, come and play with me, and I will take you on a trip far across the sea.
By the way, if a magic boat says, come get on me and go sailing, never say yes.
Well, now, do we know from where he comes? I mean, is he just sort of...
He's just a regular guy.
He's just a guy walking
guy
around.
In our reality, and he sees this weird Sid and Marty Krofft boat that has eyes and is like winking at him. And it says, come on, Jimmy, get on me. We're going to go sailing. And he goes, sure, okay. Other than having a magic flute, he's just like a regular guy.
So he's not like, he himself is not from some alternate universe where it's a land of magic and miracles.
Well, he has a magic flute, so...
Did he have the magic flute before he got on the boat?
Yeah, he did.
Okay, so the magic flute was already his.
Right.
Okay, all right.
belonged to a cookie or witch who had in mind the flute to snitch.
From her broom broom in the sky, she watched her plans materialize.
Broom, broom.
She waved her wand. The beautiful boat was gone. The skies grew dark, the sea grew rough, and the boat sailed on and on and on and on and on and on.
But Puffin Stuff was watching too and knew exactly what to do. He saw the witch's boat attack, and as the boy was fighting back,
he called his rescue racer crew, as often they'd rehearsed. And off to save the boy they flew.
But who would get there first?
Okay, I don't remember. Here's the thing about this. I watched H.R. Puffin stuff religiously when I was a kid. I mean, I watched the Sid and Marty Krofft stuff all the time. I remember almost none of this actual intro. All I remember is the hook. That's the chorus is all I remember. The rest of this has totally just fallen off my radar altogether. And by the way, when you watch this, when you actually watch the H.R. Puffin stuff intro, you really do wonder why McDonald's even bothered trying to steal this stuff when they must have known that the Krofft brothers would, you know, would immediately spot it and would seek injunctive relief against them.
Yeah, Mayor McCheese, H.R. Puffin stuff, way too close.
I mean, it is just flat out stolen.
H.R. Puffin stuff, who's your brain when things get rough? H.R. Puffin stuff.
Boy, that Jack Wild guy was weird looking.
Yeah, he was.
It was sort of unfortunate. I wonder if that's why they picked him. If he looked like a kid who probably needed the help of imaginary friends and reptiles.
Well, he was hot. He was really hot then because he had just been. Really? He had been the Artful Dodger in Oliver. So
you mean hot as in popular, not as hot as in, you know,
rawr. No, not hot as in rawr, but no, his career was, as far as kid actors go, he was actually really hot at the time. They got him, and then the kid who actually was Oliver in Oliver was, I think, the kid in Lidsville. So the Krofts just were like, grab them, they can act and sing and move, you know, so that gave them jobs immediately.
All right, so then now we have that, then followed by this. This is the Sigmund and the Sea Monster intro.
A very scary tale about two boys who were surfing one day on a very weird beach round Dead Man's Point, where there are haunted sea caves, they say. And strange sea monsters have been sighted there. If you're traveling in the area, beware, beware, beware.
The best part about that, by the way, is the guy's actually not even using reverb. He's just backing away from the microphone while saying beware.
You're a disgrace to the family.
Go out and scare a human or you're through.
Oh,
come on, come on.
Meanwhile, back on the beach, Johnny and Scott are combing the rocks unaware.
It's amazing the patience we used to have for credit sequences.
In total surprise, the boys eye this club. What can it be?
I think it's because we watched stuff live and it gave you plenty of time to, like, you know, get your snacks and get in and out of the bathroom and get in front of the TV.
That probably is a good point, by the way. And incidentally, the chorus to this sounds exactly like the chorus to H.R. Puffin stuff. God, Billy Barty is in this too. I wonder how many productions Billy Barty was actually in. The other thing about the show's all airing live, because there wasn't, you know, VCRs or, you know, or TiVo or anything, so it also gave you a little bit of a buffer zone if you thought you might be, if you were running late. In other words, you know, now that I think about it, how did we ever get anything watched when I was growing up? Because if your watch, you know, your clock was off even a little, you would come in, you know, you'd come in too late or too early or too whatever. So I guess that is one of the advantages of having like 2 minutes of opening credits and, you know, an exposition at the beginning, because it gives you a little bit of wiggle room in terms of joining the show, you know, at the top.
Well, these are the things that the kids today, they don't understand. I remember being so excited when we would get the TV Guide fall preview issue. And my mom and I would look and see what the new shows were going to be and what the new TV schedule was going to be. And we would negotiate, you know, as to what shows we were going to watch new and what we were just going to have to watch later in
reruns, which was like 6 months later at that point. Jesus. It really, I mean, as much as people are always tempted just, you know, to pine for a golden era of the past or whatever, it's amazing that we got anything watched, because it just, you know, because every night was like a Mexican standoff, you know, from like three different networks that were putting something great, often shows that were very similar. You know, they would put, it was the kind of Beverly Hillbillies Green Acres syndrome, where there'd be two shows or three shows on at the same time that all had fundamentally the same premise and plot, and you'd have to decide which one you were going to watch, because the other one, if you were lucky, you'd get to see it six or seven. And here's another thing, and I know that I'm just Captain Obvious, I'm like the 90 billionth guy to make this observation, but another thing that it's worth thinking about is that if you didn't watch it live, and then if you missed it when it was in reruns, that was it. Like, you had, was no, I mean, unless
it went into syndication.
But that was 5 years later.
Yeah.
I mean, syndication, it's not this way anymore. Now they'll syndicate stuff that's just been on for like a season. I mean, they'll take a show that gets canceled after one season and they'll run it everywhere. It used to be that you had to last, this incidentally is why Star Trek, why they were on a 5-year mission, because shows had to last 5 years for a network syndication deal to kick in. And that is why, that's why a lot of those shows, they had 5-year plans laid out at the beginning in terms of, like, in terms of, you know, making sure the actors were locked in for 5 years, making sure that the sets, they had access to all of their everything they needed for 5 years worth of episodes.
Well, that's another reason why still to this day it's such a huge deal for TV shows when they hit their 100th episode.
Right.
Why they have like a big party and they get giant cake.
Syndication money.
Yeah, because now you can get the syndication money.
Can I just tell you this? This is real quickly. Here's the thing. You know what I got the other day? This is not a thing I anticipated. I got a residual check for Leverage. So how bizarre is that?
Oh, wow.
Because International Newscaster, that episode, the season three finale, part two of the season three finale, the San Lorenzo job, but that is a thing that has aired now as a repeat once. And so I got a little bit of my repeat money, which is not a thing I ever really anticipated.
So is it like a three-part season finale? Is that what you're saying?
It's two. It was two parts. It was.
Honest to God, I downloaded it and I was looking for it and I was funny, and I never did find International News Anchor. So I was looking at the wrong episode.
It's it's a boutique role. You know, it's a small but meaty part. It's like 5 seconds. I mean, honestly. I mean, I don't even. I was going to say that I have it on my computer, and then I was going to apologize for being a douche who has the thing. But I don't think I do. I did have it. I had it with me for a while, just because I was trying to think. I was wondering if there was some way that I could excerpt it out and we could sort of play it here. But it is like so brief that if you're really not paying the closest kind of attention, you'll miss it. It's at the end of part two of the Leverage finale for season three. And I really am, and I am like exposition guy. I am the guy who comes on and I say, and another news,
Went to jail.
That's basically what I say. It looks like Vice President so-and-so, because the whole thing is about the Leverage guys rigging an election in San Lorenzo, which is a fictitious place, but which is supposed to be like, supposed to be like Monaco. Mm. You know, or like one of those, you know, like little tiny, like very moneyed sort of quasi-Italian islands somewhere where like rich people go to live, but the entire thing is them setting up and rigging the presidential election for the tiny wealthy nation of San Lorenzo, and then I come on at the end and I say, meanwhile it appears that President so and so is out while school teacher Michael Vettori is in, and another news, and then I move on, and then it's like that's it. But then you just see me sort of babbling in the background, like, because there's like a cocktail party happening and they have CNN International on in the background, as you always do at a party.
Well, yeah.
And you can see me there, with my sort of arched eyebrow giving my bad, like, Colbert to the camera. Anyway, but I guess that has now rerun at least once, because I just figured I was being sued for something. Like,
so
I got a little
check for like $1.50.
Seriously, open it. But I mean, it's like, that's $1.50 I didn't work for, which is the great thing about it. I mean, I worked once. But I mean, you know, so now you want, it's one of those things that makes it all crystal clear, because I've done like commercial work and stuff before, but most of the commercial work I've done has been like a one-time buyout where it's like they pay you a larger amount up front than you normally would get, but you're not getting residuals. Like, you don't get paid on an ongoing basis. So
speaking of which, have you heard about Rugged Chainsaw Guy
yet? Why don't
you
shut your mouth about Rugged Chainsaw Guy? You know, it's...
I'm excited about Rugged Chainsaw Guy.
Well, you know...
I see this happening for you.
All right. That's nice of you to say. So this is the one that I wanted to play the other day. This is the opening. Now, you said you were a Sid and Marty Krofft enthusiast, but that you were not familiar with some of these shows just because they ran on a rotating basis, and depending on what your schedule was, you wouldn't have seen them. So this is The Lost Saucer, which starred Jim Nabors and Ruth Buzzy.
I know that that existed, but I don't remember watching it, but I must have because I know it existed.
I think the basic premise is that Jim Nabors and Ruth Buzzy, who are, they're sort of the, it's like, you know, in some shows there's everybody who's serious and then there's the comic relief guy. It's like they're two comic relief people who you get the sense that, I think the deal is that they have been put on their own saucer by the Federation because they're basically just like F-ups. And so they're not allowed to sort of, like, they have to tag along the rest of the fleet, like, in their own sort of, you know, like, do-do-do-do-do saucer at the rear because they're just, nobody wants them around. As a result, they get horribly off course. They get lost. They land on Earth looking for directions. And then they pick up, you know, the mandatory sort of brigade of kind of Tiger Beat teenagers. And then the rest of the series, I think, consists of them flitting around the universe from place to place trying to get back home. But the great thing about this is that, like a lot of the other the openings, it tells the entire story. But as I was mentioning the other day, it has that great sort of like 60s bubblegum, almost garage rock feel to it. Not unlike the Land of the Lost opening. So we'll just a little bit of, let's see if I can.
Out of the sky.
Chorus.
The Lost Saucer.
And then the worst.
Starring Jim Nabors.
The worst reverb effect you've ever heard.
Ruth Buzzy.
So my whole thing about these is I just want to know who these bands were. I want to know who the guys were that recorded these theme songs. And because whoever that is, the guy singing that theme right there, that is the same guy that is singing the Land of the Lost opening. I mean, I would bet you my bottom dollar. Because that was, and I think a lot of people, including myself, I think for a long time labored under the illusion that, what's his name, Wesley Urey, who played Will on Land of the Lost, that he sang the theme song. But that was not the case. It does sound a lot like him, but I don't believe that it was him. So I want to know exactly who it was that was performing the theme songs for the. And was it just like, just some studio band that just sat there and just churned things out, or
I'm assuming so.
Or was it some actual band that performed, you know, like commercially, that then as their side gig came in and did these things occasionally. So this is all the stuff that fascinates me.
Well, I'm hoping that you have in there my favorite Sid Marty Krofft from childhood. I have to admit, I did have a love of H.R. Puff and stuff, but I also was a big fan of the Bugaloos.
Bugaloos as in the air and everywhere?
Yes.
I do have that. Let's see if I can find that. Hold on a second.
Interesting. If you look up the Bugaloos on Wikipedia, I did not realize this. Among those who auditioned in spring of 1970,
Charles Manson,
the Bugaloos, Phil Collins.
Really?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
He was he was one of the finalists for the role of IQ, who was the grasshopper.
Let's see. Here's the.
The Bugaloos. The Bugaloos, we're in the air and everywhere, flying high, flying loose.
I don't think I watched the Bugaloos. I mean, I certainly was familiar with them, but I think I viewed them as being a little too Martha Ray.
And Billy Barty was in the Bugaloos too.
This really was just a factory they had going on there, wasn't it? Because, I mean, you have the same band for everything. You have the same. You have a lot of the same cast. You have Billy Barty, who's like in 90% of these shows. I think the only person he didn't play was Chaka.
They tried to like turn it into kind of a Monkees thing where they actually released an album And it was like a manufactured group, like the monkeys. But then they put wings on them and made them be bugs.
Well, of course.
And be in a Mardi Gras thing. But they actually tried to release an album and make them have like hit records.
Well, you know why they did that though is because the Banana Splits had some success with that. I'm a huge fan of 60s bubblegum music, and the idea that they were able to do that sort of cross platform marketing where you could actually create like. As I always know, with Sugar Smacks breakfast cereal, that you could actually have that they created a Sugar Bears group who then put out actual records. I mean, you could go buy, and I own at home the "I Enjoy Being a Boy" single by the Sugar Bears, and then the Banana Splits released. Did you ever hear the "I Enjoy Being a Boy"? Let me play. This is the best thing ever. So this is the Banana Splits, where they were a show. They were not a Sid and Marty Krofft joint, I don't think.
No, although I guess Sid and Marty Krofft were involved in the in designing like the sets and stuff.
It has that kind of look to it. Yeah, I think it was a sort of they. Let's see, they assisted. Let's see, this is their attempt to write a sort of Beatles song for the Banana Splits. This is called "I Enjoy Being a Boy." Let's see if I can get this to play here. Hold on a second. This is clearly where, and when you hear this song, by the way, this is where you realize that just a bunch of the lamest, whitest guys you've ever seen in your life, like a bunch of Mad Men guys, like a bunch of Pete Campbells, are just sitting around. I mean, I'm surprised that Mad Men hasn't done something like this. I mean, maybe they will as they get further into the 60s. But this, you can just see just a bunch of like my three sons looking bastards just sitting around a table and thinking, okay, the kids, they love this psychedelic stuff. We need to write ourselves. We have this breakfast cereal and we have this television show, and we're going to be putting up these flexi disc records on the back of the breakfast cereal. We need to write a psychedelic tune to go with it. Let's write some psychedelia. What did the Beatles write? And then somebody said, well, here's Strawberry Fields Forever. And they said, okay, let's write a thing like that, but let's make sure that it sucks. All right, so.
I live in a cucumber castle on the bank of a cranberry sea. And starfish dance under my drawbridge. And blackbirds make nest in my tree. I enjoy being a boy in love with you.
That is a terrible song.
Yes. Lives in a cucumber castle, Don.
Well, that's suggestive.
Softly from a hill of vanilla fudge cream, I enjoy.
And of course, if you watch the video for this, it is like the four guys in their huge, weird, creepy, you know, like animal suits that don't you know quite fit, and they all have like the weird sunglasses and the perma grinning mouths. But then they're doing that like. But then they're doing that weird psychedelic effect, like from Spinal Tap. They listen to the Flower People, where it's all like rotating, like kaleidoscope style. And Derek Smalls is going, "We love you." It looks just, and then it just does the thing of like flashing to like negative over and over and over again, and then it goes to a brightly colored sort of a Technicolor negative thing, like to give you a seizure.
The Banana Splits directors were also very fond of the thing of like zooming in and out really fast with the camera to make everything like exciting.
Look, here's the thing. I can admit this. Most of our entertainment sucked when we were growing up. And I think if we were just fortunate in this. If we were lucky in any way in our childhood, it's just because we had no sense of how bad all the entertainment was that we were being given. I mean, if you watch the average kid's show now, I mean, it's done to a degree of quality. It is like exponentially greater than anything we ever had growing up. I think people would be amazed if they went back and spent any amount of time watching the stuff that they thought was awesome when they were kids. I can appreciate it in a sort of, you know, in a relative kind of way. But goddamn, I mean, it was just, it was just bad, bad, bad. All right, let's see. Well, let's do this. It is now 3:30. Let's do another visit to the news desk, and then I'm actually going to have to get home so I can get back here because I have to return the Kindle to the person with the zombie and the economics. Hey. Let's see. Where's my... hold on a second. There we go.
And now, from the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
Muslim leaders in Amherst, New York, are upset that a homeowner who lives next door to a newly opened mosque posted a sign on his front lawn that reads, "Bomb making next driveway." Michael Hike lives along a heavily traveled road in the town of Amherst, a suburb of Buffalo, New York. The next driveway on the same side of the road is the entrance to the Jafarius Center. Hike told local media outlets he put up the sign last weekend because he was frustrated with how the mosque and town officials handled his complaints that the mosque was built too close to his property and its bright lights violate town code. He told the Buffalo News, "The place is too close. I don't care what people think. It doesn't matter what people think. This is a way to get answers now. I get none from the town. The intent was to catch the eye of the people I have a problem with." Mosque officials said the sign's message is offensive and that Hike hasn't responded to the request for a meeting. Dr. Syed Jafri, a Amherst psychiatrist and member of the mosque's board of trustees, said, "I would really think it's an incitement of hatred against Muslims. Law enforcement should take it very seriously. Tomorrow somebody could say, oh, they have weapons, and people might believe it." Mubarak Abidi, the mosque president, said he called Amherst police over the weekend about the sign and was told its posting wasn't illegal.
Okay.
Guy posted a sign on his front lawn, "Bomb making next driveway."
All right. Somebody has asked a question about last Sunday's episode of The Killing, actually, which has to do with and so a guy wants to know. The reason I bring this up is because you just mentioned the whole thing about the mosque and the whatever. The guy had just emailed me about 12 minutes ago, and he asked a question about Sunday's episode, and he said, "Did we ever hear any more on Sunday's killing episode about whether the FBI was investigating Bennett specifically, or was it just?" Or was it just the mosque they were investigating? So that did the FBI actually say anything about it being Bennett the school teacher specifically that they were investigating it, or was it just like
so.
A terrorism thing in general?
I don't think so. They're being very closed mouth about what they share at all, though.
Okay.
So yeah, no, I don't think they.
All right, yeah, that's what I thought. It was just they were just sort of vague about the entire thing. All right, we should take a moment to say that if you are listening to the Rick Emerson Radio program right now, and if you were thanking the sweet God above that this show is here to grace your ears and your brain and your life with all flavors of entertainment. You can thank Squires Electric for that. You can find them at squireselectric.com or facebook.com/Squires Electric. You can also call them. That is 503-252-1609. 503-252-1609. You can learn more about all that they do. And if you go to squireselectric.com, by the way, you're going to be able to see some photographs of just things that they've done, jobs they've gone on, repairs that they've managed to execute, despite the fact that when they got there, the place was basically just like crumbled in into so many cinders because somebody had attempted to do the job themselves and it worked out poorly.
Wacky hijinks and electrical mayhem.
Well, and somebody's actually... they've posted a picture here at Squires or at facebook.com/Squires Electric. It's of a tree that fell across an overhead power line. And then as the power line fell, it hit. You'll have to sort of go in and see this picture so you understand what I'm talking about. But a tree fell across the overhead power line and then it all crashed into the side of an apartment. And then the power line actually landed. You know, because it sort of swung down and then the power line was hanging, brushing against the side of the house where it was touching a metal pipe. And then I guess it was just arcing all over the place looking for ground, as they say.
Oh, wow.
And so there's just like, and so then it shorted everything out, and plus there's burns and there's scorches, and plus, and then, hey, there's a huge power line like dangling against the side of our house. So they had to come out and they had to fix that entire thing as well. So they really, when I say that, like, they'll come and they'll put like a plug or a fuse or, you know, like a rheostat or something in your house. I mean, they do that, but that's all, you know, that's kind of the lower level stuff. I mean, really, they'll handle actual like big serious problems for you, up to and including, you know, like wiring an entire building or, you know, stopping the huge power line that's hanging against the outside of your house from just scorching everything it touches. So you can find out more about them by going to squireselectric.com or facebook.com/squireselectric or calling 503-252-1609. They are proud sponsors of this, the Rick Emerson Radio program. That is squireselectric.com or facebook.com/squireselectric. All right. There's one thing I wanted to ask you before we sort of wrap all of this up, and that is, so you are a Fringe watcher, are you not?
I am indeed.
Did something really weird or strange or unpleasant or bad happen on Fringe the other night? Was there some sort of a finale that was really unsatisfying or confusing to people?
Yes.
Because I was when I was out doing Outlook Portland, Cheryl was talking to one of the guests. He was the guy from Kaiju Cast. Kyle Yount was there, and they were bonding over Fringe, and I think they were kvetching about something that had happened on the show, and I was asking whether or not it was a show that I should begin watching, because it seems like it has trended downward for a lot of people. So I don't know what season Fringe is on.
I'm not sure either. Season five, maybe? Four or five? I'm really not sure. Three, four, five, somewhere in there. I wouldn't say it's trended downward, but it is definitely going in that J.J. Abrams direction of getting like overly entangled in its own mythology. And when, you know, it would have been very nice if they just, you know, stuck a little bit more to the case of the week format, where you got to see all of the crazy, wacky
right.
stuff that was going on in them doing stuff. And, you know, because Abrams loves mysteries from the past and time travel and people having to build mysterious machines that do things and somebody being the chosen one to operate the mysterious machine. He always keeps going back to
right.
that. And sure enough, he did the same thing on Fringe. And then, in the season finale, I won't give it away because I would say it's worth watching. There is an awful lot in Fringe that is worth sticking with the few things that are frustrating.
So I should continue watching because it's on, yes, you said like season three or four. So I should continue watching all the way up to like now.
Yeah.
There isn't like some point where I should just pull the ripcord on.
Yeah, and then you can join those, because we were actually talking about this weekend. Jenny and Cheryl and I were talking about it at Wonder Northwest, that you can join us with our season finale thing of like, what the hell?
Come on.
What? Yeah, so.
All right. So, okay. So they have just finished the third season of Fringe.
Okay.
Okay. Because
it feels like five seasons. There's been a lot going on.
Because House is going to be done, at least for the season, and for me, I'm going to be done with House as of next Monday. Justified is off. Breaking Bad, I guess, is not coming back until we figured either June or July. So I got like another, you know, month or possibly two. And then The Killing is, I mean, we're like 4 or 5 weeks away from the end of The Killing. So I'm actually in like a month, with the possible exception of Breaking Bad, I'm going to actually have nothing currently airing. You know, even if I start at the beginning while the show is actually on season five, like I'm gonna have nothing currently airing that I am watching. So I'm starting lining up the things to watch. So all right, well, Fringe may be one of the next things that I get to. We're gonna bring the curtain down on this so we can sort of stay on schedule with everything else. Tomorrow we'll be joined by Mr. Big Jim Willig. He'll be in the studio for another installment of Humor Me Comedy 101. Steve Martin will be the focus of our ruminations and ponderings. Tomorrow, that is tomorrow, on Humor Me Comedy 101. After a brief musical interlude, we will have an encore of today's Legion of News, followed by an encore of today's very fine Rick Emerson radio program, which comes to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the Milkpacking District in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, it's Don Taylor, Advanced Technology and Magic, provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, Executive Producer Bruce Zagler, Chief of Staff Cheryl Kanakoa. We thank you for listening, and we will see you again tomorrow. We come to you today, Thursday, May 19th, 2011, as we do every weekday around 1:30 or so. So thank you for listening. Be safe. See you tomorrow. Bye now.